Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you.
As the tears are falling from my face, with all my fears I long for your embrace. How am I gonna carry on and be the one you lead it on when I'm falling down? Now the tears are falling from your face. I never
Of Continue Mission. I am your host, James McCormick. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show, folks. So we had some great guests that were lined up tonight, and unfortunately, one of them is out delivering backpacks. He was on there last week, Brett. And, you know, this guy and his soon-to-be wife, they are traveling all over the place, making things happen. Presenting backpacks to those that are in need, homeless veterans. We had a great talk today. Him and I had a great talk today. We're looking at partnering and coming together and do something for the youth of America and also for veterans and their families. How cool is that, right? Whenever you go out and you actually do something and you're actually producing something of good. And not just sitting around trolling people on social media. You know, those kind of people, you know, are going to be the talk for tonight as well, because guess what, folks? Guess what the number one killer of teens in America is? Teens and young adults. Suicide. That's right, folks. Suicide. And almost 98% of those suicides were brought on or affected or seriously hindered by social media bullying and nonsense. Twitter, Facebook, you need to clean your act up. You know, when we look at things like this, you know, we don't think about the effects that it has, but how shameful it is. And I believe that God has a special place lined up for those people that have caused the deaths of the little ones, especially those adults out there that should know better. I think it's a disgrace. I think it's a shame. And I think that it's destroying our youth. We have got get our stuff together, folks. When your number one killer of young adults is suicide, then we got a problem. You know, we talk about 22 veterans a day. We talk about that being a serious issue, which it is a serious issue. But let me tell you, when you talk about a teenage kid, and in some cases, preteen, folks, preteen. You know, I've had friends that have had, you know, I had a friend that lost her son, and what a dang shame that that is. You know, when you think about that and you think about the hurt and the pain, all because some jackasses are on social media, because some weak adults allow this stuff to happen, you know, people are burying their kids. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, you know, for that kind of stupidity. And I'm going to tell you something, folks. We have got to put a stop to it. The only way you're going to put a stop to it is we need to get active and we need to get engaged. We need to start demanding. You know, I hear a lot of people screaming about my freedom of speech. Your freedom of speech stops where my freedom begins. Understand that. Understand that people need to really, really think about it. It's not a freedom of speech to slander. It's not a freedom of speech to commit libel. It's not a freedom of speech to commit, you know, all these horrific things that are committed that are bringing these, you know, the cyberbullying and videotaping, you know, kids, humiliating little kids in public so that they can get, you know, 1,000 hits on TikTok, you know. Where are the adults in the room? Do we have any adults in the room? Because we need some adults in the room, folks, because there is absolutely zero. I don't think there's any adults in the room at Facebook and Twitter. I don't. I'll probably get sued by them, but that's okay. You know what I mean? Because it's like somebody needs to stand up to these people and tell them, say, you know, enough is enough. Stop allowing the nonsense. Okay? Stop allowing the nonsense. I mean, if I go to a place like LinkedIn, that's where I do all of my professional social media stuff, is on LinkedIn. If they see that kind of jackassery going on a place like that, they boot you off. They boot you off. And for all these people making these TikTok videos and talking about your freedom and your liberty and your independence, well, guess who's getting the money for that? The Chinese, baby. That's who's getting the money from all those TikTok videos that you're making, and you're out there acting like a fool in front of everybody. And guess what? They're enjoying every minute of it. Every minute of it, collecting your data, pulling your information. You know, I can't believe that we have people in America that are so hell-bent against communism and socialism, but are so ignorant to the fact that they're putting their money in the pockets of the very people that's trying to destroy the freedom of the world. What do you think about that, America? That's the fact, Jack, and that is the truth. Rich, hey, can you hear me?
Father, yeah, Mike, yeah.
I got you guys on.
I'm here.
What do you think about that? I mean, what do you think about the number one killer of young adults is suicide? Sickening.
I saw a very sad note that was left by a preteen, and what it said is, he said, I had nothing to look forward to. And when I think about a lack of purpose, and like you said, a lack of an adult in the room helping a person to develop and flourish and have something to look forward to, it's very sad. But when you're so self-absorbed and you're involved in a idiot community, and I hate to say that, but you're with a group of people that don't know the nose from the elbow, as my mother used to say,
then you're right.
Going to end up like that.
You're right. You're exactly right. And everybody is, you know, TikTok is all the rage, but it's like, you know, hey, look, we buy a lot of stuff that's made in China. I get it. I really get it. I've got a drone that's made in China, you know. But I'm not going on TikTok making these ridiculous videos because I know that generates money for the no joke, the Chinese Communist Party. I'm telling you, 100%. A business, there is no private business in a communist nation. Would you all agree with that? Like, there was a time when America really stood up against communism. Now, we're worried about these socialists, you know, that come out here and talk about the free things for everybody. And I'm not trying to hurt anybody's feelings, okay? You know, I'm a capitalist, but I'm a true capitalist. And let me just we talked about that. You know, being, like you said, Father Michael, we're to be magnanimous, right? And to do those things that are righteous and good, but to have a flourishing business and require your employees to show up on time in the right uniform and to actually perform a function. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And you know, America was made to be a capitalist society. It really was. We were meant to be small farmers, you know, merchants, you know, workers on the sea, workers on the riverways and the waterways, and people made their fortunes and were allowed to make their fortunes. And then when you hear about what's going on in China right now, China continuously flexing their muscles, flexing their muscles. You know, they're preparing to invade Taiwan. You know, I mean, that's inevitable. That will happen eventually. You see, you know, the patrolling in the Pacific with the Russians and the Chinese together. And we're busy over here jacking around on Facebook and TikTok, you know, and giving them money to do it. I just don't understand it. I mean, am I wrong? Am I over on this?
No, we had a very thoroughly conversation about the Wealth of Nations, Adam Smith. We talked about morally restrained capitalism and moral parameters. But, you know, getting back to what you touched on just a minute ago, I feel like there aren't many heroes and many examples for the young people, because many of our so-called adults, and look, we're all sinners, but have become hedonistic and self-absorbed. And so a child doesn't have a great model. So why is it that there's nothing going on in the family? There's nothing going on in the community. There's nothing going on in the church. So they have to get into this community where it's the blind leading the blind. Like, what's really missing? I think you put your finger on it about an adult in the room. Now, we know there are several households that are not run by two parents. And so, therefore, you don't have the important aspects of development. But I wonder where the wisdom has gone. And I wonder if we've just become hedonistic and self-indulgent, and we haven't given any models, any examples of self-restraint or the need to sacrifice and save and to delay gratification. I really feel that. And even in the military, we're having tremendous problems. But I wonder sometimes if the leadership is just talking, or are they exemplifying and showing the soldiers, the airmen, the sailors, and the Marines exactly, you know, the model. You know, when I teach critical thinking, I talk about good models for critical thinking, and we use the letter from the Birmingham jail from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And if you want to learn a golf swing, if you want to learn a tennis, you know, swing, you know, a baseball swing, you want to learn it from someone who's a good model, who knows how to do it correctly. And I just wonder why the children are so lost. Is there a lack of leadership, or have they just gone off, you know, the tracks and they're not interested? But I'm just wondering, why are there no examples? Why doesn't someone stand up and say, I'm willing to be an example? I remember reading about role models, and I forget who the athlete was. It was a basketball player, I believe. I'm no role model. You know, when you're that public, you have no choice but be a role model, because these young people are going to mimic you, especially if they don't have anyone in the home that they could look up to. So I'm just wondering why there's so much despair. I'm just wondering why there aren't the examples. You know, a lot of people that I have interviewed tell me what an impact their dads had on them. You know, he was hardworking, this kind of model, this kind of example. My mom was sacrificial, this kind of thing. And I'm just wondering if we don't need to look at maybe this juvenile delinquency, or this thing that we call adolescence that we've now allowed to go into the late 20s. And I'm wondering if, you know, I mean, I went in the military at 17 years old. I was expected to be a man. I was expected, I was graded as a man. And I really think that I've met a lot of young men. I've met a lot of middle-aged men that haven't grown up. And I'm not trying to be super critical here, but I'm just wondering, maybe that young people are floundering because they don't have very good models. Or maybe they don't have any heroes. Or maybe they're just stubborn and they want to learn the hard way, but it just seems like they're floundering and they're lost. And why are they looking for so much acceptance on social media? Why are they looking for affirmation and approbation on social media? You know, from Scripture, God says, "This is my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased." Every child needs to have affirmation from a parent. And I don't think you look for it illegitimately. Now, I was in a fraternity. Really, it was a gang and high school. And really, you find a lot of fatherless or a lot of those whose parents are preoccupied. They're working so hard to make a living because they want to live at a certain standard. And you find within the gang a father figure. And they'll punch you around. I mean, if I were to tell you what we had to do for pledging, of course, it's outlawed now, but this was back in 1967. But really, you're looking for someone, you know, to call you to a certain standard. You're looking for someone to discipline you. And here it is, peers that don't know what they're doing. And I can look and think back at some of my fraternity brothers and see that there was a lack of involvement of their own fathers in their lives. And so they craved that. You know, some of us looked for it and found it in the military, maybe through the drill sergeant or the company commander or whatever. But I'm just wondering, why are stray so much? Are there not shepherds leading them? Are there not examples that they could point to and say, you know, life is worth living. Look what my father, my grandfather, my mother, my grandmother did. So I'm just concerned because I see a culture that's self-indulgent. I think I told this story one time, but I was driving to church in a prayer meeting, and you know I wear a collar. And uh-huh. This little kid was in the back of a truck. He couldn't have been more than 8, maybe 10. And he kept giving me the finger. Like I'm driving behind him. He's in an open truck. He kept emphasizing. He kept giving me the finger. So his father pulled into a gas station. I pulled in right after him and blocked his car. And I got out of the car and I explained to the father. I said, "I've been driving behind you for such a long time, and all your son's been doing is giving, you know, the bird." And he goes back to the son and he goes, "Hey, man, that's not cool." That felt like slapping him in the back of the head. It's like, that's not cool. You wonder why, you know, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. I didn't say anything to him, but I was gravely disappointed to even ask him to apologize to me. I mean, he's a clergy and you're telling F you every so often. I mean, this concerns me a lot that maybe we have adolescent parents. You know, when we had to go to school for foster care and adoption, we had to go to like a 12-week course. And I just wonder if maybe some parents, because they've had poor models, need maybe parenting classes to know what it is to be the adult in the room, as you exhorted us with earlier.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, and it's not just that. It's like a lot of people watch Facebook and they say it's the gospel. It's not the gospel. You know, it is, you know, you wouldn't believe. I mean, you remember the whole thing when we were in school when you would, you know, you would say something like a tree falls in the forest and whispered into one ear. And by the time it got to the other room, it was like the whole forest would caught on fire. You know what I mean? Because it just kept changing with each person. And, but social media takes that from 0 to 100,000 miles an hour, you know, like overnight. And I think that, what's missing truly what's missing is the adults in industry that runs these things, you know, that should go in and say, okay, before you post this or before you do, and they have people that watch the content all the time. If you don't believe me, then post something political, you know what I mean, that goes
yeah.
against who they're voting for or who they support. That stuff's down within a minute. But they can't take down a video that, you know, where somebody has dumped, you know, feces on a child's head at school and they're humiliating them in public, and it takes, you know, 7 to 21 days to take that down, and adults are commenting and sharing it. I mean, come on, they should be put in jail for that. Yeah,
no, I agree with you. There's no cultural support. We don't have a cultural norm, and we laugh a little bit, you know, when Hillary Clinton said it takes a village, but you know, we have to restore community. In my neighborhood, I grew up in the projects in Newark, New Jersey. If somebody saw me doing something, my mother knew it, or they'd get in my face right there. You know, we took it seriously. Now you say the wrong thing or cross-eyed to somebody's kid, and, you know, they're ready to have you locked up. Or, you know, and it's like we've lost something about the cultural peer pressure, if you know what I'm saying, where – you know, certain things are expected. I would say to some of my soldiers, you know, constantly dropping the F-bomb, constantly talking about MF, MF. I said, when was the last time you were at a family reunion where your aunts and uncles and grandparents were there? I said, do you talk like that there? You know, perhaps you need a dictionary to expand your vocabulary. But I just think we've lost the sense of continuity as far as values are concerned and what's culturally acceptable. Now, I know there's a lot of rebellion, and I don't mean to sound insensitive to parents that are really working hard, because the culture is working against them for money. They're working against them. They're trying to take control of the kids, whether it's in school or on social media, as you said. But for some reason, when your dad is 50 and he hasn't grown up, I mean, how does that help you? I mean, I'm talking from personal experience, okay? What kind of a model do you have? Where do you go for an example to become something when people want to be perpetual adolescents? I just think we have to have that hard conversation, because I know there are a lot of parents working hard, single parents, but the community's not coming together, and what it's doing is it's plotting against parental values, and it's not supporting. And I think if you follow the money train, that's really what it's all about. It's about money. It's really not about anything else than them trying to impose their values so they can win the hearts of mind and minds of these young people. And I feel bad, because I think they're like sheep without a shepherd. I don't think they know who to follow, where to follow, what's right, what's wrong. And they're not old enough to make that decision. When parents say, I let them make their own decision, you haven't been able to make your decision. I've seen this with people in church. I'm not really sure. Well, how then can you ask their child to make their decision? It's kind of like we're going to clarify the racial problems by letting the young people go on the buses and work them out. But when you're dealing with stuff at home that you haven't worked out, what makes you think the kid's going to be able to do that just because there's more diversity on the bus? So I just think that we're going to be accountable. Scripture says, to whom much is given, much is required. And I just think that sometimes parents get tired. They don't want to fight anymore against the trends. But that's why we got to bond together. You know what happened in Louisiana, where all those dads went into the high school because there was so much violence in the high school. And they're just taking time to be present, because these young people need good models and not just the thugs that are in their school. So I'm really concerned about suicide, but why, when we would share so much hope with our young people, would they say there's nothing to look forward to? Why would there be so much self-destruction.
Right, right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, I agree. You know, I don't know why that is.
I would venture that our values are now being shaped by social media and not by other things. Okay, that is the problem, and that's what's being revealed by this insider who worked in Facebook, how social media is literally engineered to make people addicted to it. Okay, and so bullying has completely changed. Bullying has always been around, if you want to watch a good TV series about bullying and the response to it, go watch the Cobra Kai series. If you're a Karate Kid fan, I think anybody who's a Karate Kid fan has watched Cobra Kai, but it addresses that issue of online bullying, and there's a line in there where he said, "When I went to school, bullying was done face to face. Okay, you made it personal." Well, that allowed the person who was being bullied to actually defend themselves. Okay, I got into martial arts because of bullying. There are some positive aspects of it. All right, it toughens us up. But this social bullying, people have become, so engineered, addicted, whatever, to how they come across or their image online, that it, they can't turn it off. So when you've got online bullying, that's like arguing with someone on the telephone. Don't ever get in an argument with someone on the telephone, because it's too easy to hang up. But with social media, they can't hang it up.
Right.
It's like, boom, I'm going off the grid. That's an easy solution. But when you're addicted to it, it isn't. Right. And then again, it's probably, part of what both of you have talked about is, what's the alternative? What values have the parents, kids? Are they taking them outside, doing outside sports? Are they teaching them to mountain climb? Are they teaching them to ski? Are they going kayaking? Things like that. Are they giving them alternatives? Anyway, that's my thought.
Okay.
I think that's very good. I think that really characterizes what we're trying to say. Nobody's trying to point fingers. We all have had failures. We live in a fallen world. There's no utopia. But there's been a lot of dystopia due to the fact that we haven't been intentional about what we're doing. Children crave models. I mean, we fostered over 40 children, and I would just throw the ball with some of these young boys, and it was the greatest thing just to give them attention. And I don't think that we're giving our children enough attention. And even my children, now that they're older and some are married, they're looking for that attention. They're looking to be listened to. And my question is, why do young people have to give themselves 8 hours a day now, we're told, that they're on their phones or whatever type of social media? Something's missing. And then you don't learn the social skills. I tell my students 1 minute before class starts, please put away anything that you're not going to be using for your class. But as soon as they come in, they're all individually. Sometimes they're talking to each other, but not often. They're looking at their device. And, we can't depersonalize real relationships, real interaction with real people. But, I have to be honest, I don't think there's a lot of people that really care. That's why you have people who pay $300 an hour to go to a psychiatrist, because somebody will listen to them. We're so busy, we're so distracted, we really don't realize how these children are craving our attention. I remember playing baseball with my son, or teaching him how to box, going fishing or whatever, you know, he would laugh. But I know that it was important to him that I had time, irrespective of my busy schedule, for him. I mean, it broke my heart. We cried a lot, me and my son, when I was deployed. And then I was still away from them. It was almost 18 months, although I saw them a month and some weekends. But we have to realize that sooner or later, they're going to grow up, and we never took the time with them. And therefore, we're never going to have the relationship that we should have had. And so I feel bad for the young people, but they don't know better. But I think for the adults, not just to say, get off that thing, you know, but like Rich was saying, do something else. Get them outside. Do something with them. You know, don't be a pointer. Be a leader.
Absolutely. I agree with you. It's, you know, we used to have the saying, you know, when you said follow me, you know, that meant that everybody was looking at your back, because you're actually leading the charge to go forward. And that's like setting the example. That's the, you know, it's for me, it's now the problem is that now we're at a point to where we have to demand some sort of legislation that is going to, you know, because I think people get confused with what they think is their, you know, rights to say, or, you know, to say what they want. The freedom of speech, that gets thrown around a lot, freedom of speech. But freedom of speech and expression, it was never intended to be a means of just slandering and degrading of, you know, just, you know, drives them to the point of suicide. You know, so I can't see where there's not more controls out there. And it's not like I'm somebody that also goes out and advocates for a lot of laws. But, you know, you have to make laws to protect the innocent and to stop the stupid people from doing really stupid things. I mean, that's just...
ask you, James, why is the opinion of these young people so important to these other young people? I understand peer pressure, okay? But to me, it's not like you can't block somebody. It's not like you have to sit there and be victimized. I mean, if somebody was trying to, you know, sodomize somebody or try to rape somebody, I would think that your instinct is to fight, to get the hell out of there. You know what I'm saying? So I'm wondering why they're mesmerized, and pointed it out that, you know, they have made it addictive, but the algorithms. But the adults in the room have to be meeting a need. You know, for me, I've been married 45 years. There's no way I'd rather be with a group of guys than be with my wife. Okay, to me, I've been with guys, I've been in the fraternity, I've been in the military, all this stuff. Why would these kids rather be with people that are mean to them and not be with their family or siblings or cousins or, you know, large gathering? We were at times, and we still do at Christmas, our family has about 50 people. I can remember Thanksgiving, 35. You know, you had family that loved you, accepted you. Oh, they harassed you, they teased you, but you belonged. And I'm afraid that's why we have so much gang activity. People don't feel like they belong. That's why these gangs have to say, this is our turf, like they own the sidewalk, or they own, you know, something's grossly wrong. And the corporate responsibility, and they're just greedy. But so the parents just can't, you know, give their children over to Molech and sacrifice them on the altar of the internet. I mean, it's like, you know, we're going to do something as a family, and this is not going to interfere. And, you know, this is going to be fun, like Rich was saying, kayaking or whatever like that. And I just think that it's easier. And we saw this happen with video. It's easy to put the child who's maybe few months old in front of the TV, and that becomes the babysitter. And so this thing has brought a lot of greatness to us. It's taught us to do things a lot easier, but we've lost our human connection. And, you know, the bullying thing, you know, I was, as Rich was talking, I remember we had this kid. He moved from Newark, which was a rough area where I grew up. And this one kid, we're in the locker room. This is when I was in seventh or eighth grade. I could still remember it. And this one kid who later became part of my fraternity, he had a lot of older brothers. And this guy was picking on everybody. You know, he was dressed different. And this guy cleaned his clock. One time, boys' locker room, no, nothing happened beyond that. And he never bullied anymore. And you know, they're normal things that take place. But you got to have the security of your family. I'll tell you the truth. My wife did not join the teachers' union when she taught in public school. And she took a lot of heat. But she said, you know, my identity is in Christ, the love of my husband, the love of my family, the love of my church. I think these children are enslaved to these peers that really don't care about them, that what they say, what they think. And really, there are certain people who should not count that much. And you're going to kill yourself because such and such things are goofy looking, or, you know, I just think we give too much power to people. But there's got to be an antidote. There's got to be someone whose opinion really matters to me. For instance, we're all veterans. Somebody starts talking about the military that's not a veteran. Quite frankly, I can appreciate their critique and, you know, they're from the outside looking in. But quite frankly, they haven't had the experience that we have had. And so I don't think that their opinion should count as much. My heart goes out to these young people because they want to be loved. I don't know if you saw this thing. It was on TV. All these predators were meeting these runaways at the bus station in some of these big cities. And they interviewed this one predator. He said, you won't love your children, you know, licitly, legitimately. I'll love them illicitly, illegitimately. You get the drift. And
right.
I think that they're going after something because something else is missing.
Right. Well, things, you know, I'm glad you brought up the predator thing, you know what I mean, because that just brought some things. You know, it's sad. It's really sad what's going on in this, you know, not just the social media, but, you know, they bust these people, you know, when they talk about, let's talk about sexual predators. You know, sexual predators, you know, over 70 years old are going after, you know, 12 and 13-year-old kids, and in some cases younger. And I'm just, you know, flabbergasted by it all, you know, and you see, you know, this level of, gosh, of just uncaringness about it. I mean, people get riled up and they get stirred up, you know, when they see it. But where's the action to prevent it from happening? See, all of this happens on social media. All of this happens because of, you know, the so-called, let's just open it up. It's your right to say or do whatever you want to say. And it's just, it has really, really opened up this quagmire of just nastiness.
Can we talk about trafficking a little bit, James? Because you brought up a really, you know, really, see, again, okay, girls abducted. There aren't the protections of families, fathers and brothers and other siblings, uncles and aunts and grandparents. We've lost the sense of the family. And you have predators, but again, what in the child? Now, there are children that are innocent, and we've had all kinds of heinous things said, even by medical associations, that it might be okay. No, what is the craving that young people have? Now, some of these pimps and other thugs and stuff like that, they're doing it by force. But again, I'm trying to express tonight, there's a vacuum in the hearts of people, and they'll be misled if you just give them an attention. That's why everybody in authority has a grave responsibility. We've seen it with coaches. We've seen with people of Boy Scout leaders. We've seen it with people in authority, priests. We've seen it. We're getting advantage of the vulnerabilities of others. But my question is, why are they so vulnerable? Why are they so broken? Why is there so much rejection that they would look for acceptance from, like you said, a 70-year-old person if they're a teenager? They're looking for something innocent, perhaps, but the person thinks they're giving them love when they're fulfilling their own lusts. So I think this trafficking thing is also something that is something that our young people are involved in and are prey to. And a lot of this is because of the internet. You know, they start, I mean, I know police officers that, you know, act as if they're someone else, but they start talking to these people on social media. But why is it that no one else is talking to them? Why is it that you got to talk to a complete stranger who says they're a 15-year-old girl when it's a 35-year-old man? I mean, how many, why is it that people don't have tangible people, adults in their life that they can talk to?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have no one to talk to. Can I talk to you? Yes, you can talk to me and I'll listen. I mean, we have a great opportunity to minister to people, but people are hungry for someone to listen and to affirm. Like you said, James and Rich, about the bullying, how about if someone's talking about the good qualities? How about talking about the opportunities, helping you maybe in tutoring or whatever to help you fulfill your purpose? I just think that we could say the government needs to step in, but I think we call it subsidiarity. You got to start at grassroots.
Okay, so we're covering two areas here as far as solutions. James, a proponent for a government solution, which we are realizing that there needs to be some kind of regulation to social media, all right? We were originally hoping that social media would police itself. They did make a big effort on that during the elections. Again, they come under criticism because, well, they're policing themselves on one viewpoint and not another. Okay, so there's a lack of fairness in that. The other one is parenting, okay? And that's what Father Michael has been pushing. And I tend to agree with, well, I agree with both, but I think the best solution is, because, look, government, they're not going to get it right, and they're not going to get it right anytime soon. And whatever regulations they come up with, well, the people are going to find ways around it. So we go back to parenting. All right. Now, there's just a lot of people who aren't qualified, to be good parents, and it may not be their fault. I mean, who were their role models? Were their role models? So for both of you, I guess the question is, so how do you fix that? I mean, what are the solutions? Where can people go to learn how to be good parents?
I would just like to say to you, Rich, that we don't want to lose our children to the government, because our children have been given to us by God. They can reinforce, they can help us, like in our state, at least it used to be a rule that you could take your young person's license away, and then if you brought them to court because they violated a certain law, then the government would keep it until they were like 19. I don't know if that still stands. But this cooperation is important. You know, if I want to learn how to paint, I'm going to go be an apprentice of a good painter. If I want to do martial arts, I'm going to go to a good martial artist. There are parents and people and ministries that teach parenting skills. Okay, maybe you had a bad example. You know, in our family, my wife had a phenomenal example. I didn't have a good example. So we had to learn together. There are books, but it's not impossible. You know, teaching critical thinking and being civil and having civil discourse in the public square, one of my students, who's a senior, said to me, is it even possible? Now we're almost done with the semester, and I think I've convinced the student that, yes, it is possible. There are good models, okay? No family is perfect, okay? But there is help, and people are willing to share how they were able to do well. Now, you know, some young people make bad decisions, just like those in creation who rebel against God. But I do think that the church, just relatives in general, can reinforce what you're doing and put good peer pressure on the children. But I think if we leave things to the government, like we've done with education, it's beyond their area of competence. And all they want to do is throw money at it, and they're not really producing the product. So again, grassroots, subsidiarity, let's support one another, especially in our family and in our extended family. You know, my sister might say to me, would you talk to my daughter, who is my niece? Maybe they won't accept it from me, but I think that's what family's all about. We're there to reinforce the same thing together, the same values together. And there should be a good peer pressure. But I don't think the government, they want to own the children. They want to tell us what to do with the children. But God gave us the children. Okay, the state did not produce the children. The mother and father did. And so we don't want to renege that responsibility, nor do we want to lose our children to the government. Because we'll stand before God and give an account. Now, some are rebellious. There are people that, you know, God isn't going to impose himself upon. They'll make a decision, and it might be for eternal damnation. It's their own decision. But I think there are good communities. We've seen it among the Amish. We've seen it among other peoples where they're tight-knit, some of the Mormons, family-orientated or whatever. You don't have to believe in their spiritual things, but they're good models of examples of what it means to be a family unit that then builds up a society. So I really do think that children are crying out for attention. And you may think that, you know, they want that world, that World Wide Web, and they want all this freedom and exposure. But, you know, too much too soon is not good. That personal connection and even the ability, I try to interact with my students because I think that social skills have been lost because we haven't been forced. You know, even us gentlemen, when we've gone to military balls, my wife and I had been out of the military for a long time. So we went to a class that a general's wife gave just about protocol and certain parameters and dignity and courtesies and things of that nature. They need to feel like they belong to a culture, to a community. And I think a lot of good models. You know, John Wesley, by the way, his mother had 19 children. Susanna Wesley, her name was. And when she was praying, she would put a towel over her head. And the little kids knew that they could not disturb her during that time. But she also said, if you don't dominate, and I know a lot of people are going to misunderstand this, if you don't understand what it means to bring that child under some kind of discipline by age 4, most likely you're going to lose the person. I'm not talking about enslaving them, but there's got to be some responsibility. You're formed. I mean, by the time you're 6, 10 years old, you're basically formed unless the Lord transforms you. So, I mean, it's a big responsibility, but it's not just mom and pops. There are siblings, cousins, uncles. Everybody is in the process of helping to build. One last story. The Jews usually have a quorum of such where in their communities, a young man, a young woman will go to college, and then the college, and they'll support them up until they're 30 years old, get them started in business, share with them some wisdom, things of that nature. They don't have to go anywhere outside of their family. I'm reading a tremendous book about all the problems the Irish and the Italians had in New York in the later 1800s. But you got to find your people. You got to find those that will nurture you. And so I don't think the government is even competent to do that. They can support, but they are not competent.
What do you think, Rich?
Well, I'm laughing because I'm in agreement with him. Okay. Yeah, there's probably not much more I can add. Actually, the thing that came to my mind when you're talking about your social support, your peer support, that's where gangs come in. I mean, that's why people are are attracted to gangs. They need that, support by their peers, that camaraderie. And, the big difference between gangs and the military is adult leadership, okay? You know, the fact that you can look at the military, the Marines or the infantry or special forces or the Rangers as a gang. But the difference is there are senior leaders in there who keep everybody in line. And there is a common goal. And so there's this growth process with it. Okay. Well, that NCO, he's your mother, your father, he is your guide. He's going to, he's filling that role as your surrogate parent to get you to where you're supposed to be. And as a company commander, it was my job to punish and reward people, who either strayed from that path, made mistakes, or did exceptionally well. Okay. And I went to my company reunion, and I got to sit across from a guy I was talking about. We were a rapid deployment force, so that rotated every 3 or 4 months. You would go on to you're on first recall, okay? And if you're division ready, battalion one, you're on a 2-hour recall. And when that phone rings, we get the phone call. We call everybody up, and they've got to be in within 2 hours. And then if you're DRB2, it's 5 hours. And we were on DRB2, and I had a bunch of my soldiers decide to go to Los Angeles, which was a 5-hour drive. Okay, and a lot of them missed it. We had a recall on Sunday, and when you stood before my desk, it was maximum punishment. I had an E6 standing there. I'm like, okay, how do you plead? He's like, they all trusted my judgment. And I'm like, okay, max, busting rank, so much. And the guy's married. I'm like, I mean, taking all the money I can take away from him and stuff like that. And then, 90-day suspension. Next guy, max, 90-day suspension. Max, 90. And the guy sitting across me goes, yeah, sir, I missed. He didn't miss that one. He goes, yeah, I missed that. I missed a recall, too. And I'm sitting there going, oh, no, what'd I give you? And he goes, max, 90-day suspension. 90-day suspension means you got 90. It says, yeah, I maxed you out, but I'm not taking anything. And you got 90 days to walk on eggshells. And if you don't screw up, guess what? You get to keep everything. But to me, that's, in all fairness, that was more punishment then that was fair punishment. You know, it was just put him on edge for that 90 days. But I love 90 day suspension. All right. But anyway, that's what's missing. That's why people are attracted to gangs. That's why people are attracted to the military, they want that support. They want a support group, but at the same time, they need good adult leadership.
I had a drill sergeant tell me, James and Rich, that we have to do in 8 weeks what some parents haven't done in 18 years. And they were frustrated because it was like they had come to them. And I think some people go into the military, especially in the Marines, because they're so craving discipline. And, you know, I was invited by my parents. They were going to be willing to sign me in. But I knew that I was out of control. Okay, I needed the Lord to get a hold of my life. But I really think that's true. Raising pigs, we're not raising, you know, chickens. You know, there's something about rearing a child and being intentional about it and spending a lot of time. You know, it's not just give me some money and I'll be okay. And I know for my children and all the many things that I had to do, always made sure that there was that contact, you know. And that I lost a daughter 5 years ago. She was 24, but I have a little plaque from her, and it's choked me up a little bit, but it says, Dad, and it has a picture of a clock on it, and it says, thank you for the time. Thanks for giving me the time, and I will keep that the rest of my life. And so this is not simplistic what we're saying tonight. Okay, yeah. The government, I'm sorry, they're not competent. Yes, some of these big corporations with all the money, they can make some decisions. But we have to get back to just being a family unit. We know that from the Army, how important it is, cohesion and unity. You know, in my one HHC in Korea, you had to go through an initiation. You know, doing push-ups, kissing a stone, this kind of thing. But you belonged. And as Rich was saying with the gang, but that's an illegitimate family. That's not a real family. You need the real thing. Each of us has that desire. You know, this is my beloved son whom I am well pleased. Children need to know that their parents affirm them. And, you know, and it goes on forever. You know, your children, no matter how old they are, they're still your children. Now you treat them differently, but then they learn how to do that for their children. And some of us didn't have it, but I found it, as Rich used the word surrogate, I had to look for a surrogate because I didn't get the parenting I needed. But I knew that I couldn't provide it unless I humbled myself even as an older person and allowed myself to be parented so that I could have those skills to share with my own children.
That is what it's about. It's really about making the sacrifices so that, you know, there's nothing I wouldn't do for my children. You know, I mean, I would kill somebody if I thought they were trying to hurt my children. You know, I mean, I would give my heart if I knew that, even if I knew that I would die if they needed it to keep living. You know, and I just don't know what in the heck is going on in America when you see people that just throw their children out to the wolves like garbage. I mean, it's just, it's terrible.
Well, Mother Teresa said, if we in America kill our babies, why are we so surprised that there's the kind of violence there is in families in other places? So I think it comes down to the basics of the sacredness of life and also accountability. I appreciate, I'm going to be preaching about sacrifice on Sunday, and I appreciate you bringing that up. Greater love hath no man than this, than to lay down his life for his friends. And how many of our veterans have done that? How many of our soldiers have done that? But you know something, James and Rich, sacrifice is not looked upon as honorable anymore. So therefore, We're going to make all the money. We're going to do whatever we want to do. We're never going to say, I'm going to sacrifice. I remember my mother sacrificing when we didn't have enough food. She saw that I was finished. I was the only boy. She would take what was on her plate and put it on mine. I mentioned that at her funeral. I never forgot that. See, we look down on sacrifice. I just don't think we're doing that for children. Yeah, we're running them to all the soccer games and this and that. That's not what they need. They need personal time with their parents. They need truth time with their parents, relational time. You know, I'd always say to my son, because when he was getting older and you have boys and Rich, you know, am I embarrassing you? Because I would embrace him. Maybe we're Italians, even maybe kiss him on the cheek. And no, you know, I always wanted to be affectionate. I was always firm. I was tough with him. But touch is important. Now, I had four daughters. To have a lot of discretion and really be an honorable and a pure man. But nonetheless, there needs to be affirmation. And, you know, when you talk to your daughter sometimes, it's kind of, you know, you're yelling when you're not yelling, where some boys respond differently. But I just think that if we had more love, you know, we're trying to build a utopia with the government, and they want to do this and talk about justice. But if we just treat each other better in the family, I think we might see more flourishing, and the young people wouldn't go out looking for stuff from other people. But again, I want us to answer that question. Why are the opinions of those on social media so important to me? Why should that be so important? Why shouldn't someone else's opinion that I know I love and care for and loves and cares for me be more important? I think that's really what we have to ask. Why does that bully or whoever it is in the classroom have so much authority over my life? Like I mentioned to you, what my wife says, look, I could care less. You know, they mocked my wife. They said different things because she wouldn't join a teacher's union. But she didn't get her identity from her work. Mm-hmm. She served them. She treated them special. But I think that if people have a solid family, they're not going to be so enslaved to the opinions of those kids at school because they know they have a loving family and relatives and cousins and so on and so forth. And if they don't have that, there are a lot of church families that can provide that. You know, when Paul talks about, you know, treating the younger women with all purity, the older women as mothers, the older men as fathers, the brothers as young men as brothers, well, because he's trying to create a family environment. So if we can't get it in a natural family, we can get it in a solid, sound community of faith.
Well, I guess it's my turn. So I think something we have brought up is that there is a breakdown in parenting skills that are passed down from parents to parents, okay? It's lost for various reasons. Parents are separated. You know, you have the percentage of single parent families is higher now than it ever was before. They're abusive parents. Okay. So the question is, how do we get back to proper parenting? And I think for anybody who's listening to Father Michael, you know, one of the things, he's not coming out and saying it, but I think there's a very important role for churches in teaching parenting, okay, teaching role models. Now, that doesn't mean all your preachers, deacons, and elders are good role models, but, you know, you join a church, the congregation is there. It's like joining the gang, joining the military. There is a support group there. So there are people who want to help you, all right? That is the Christian spirit. The other thing is, and you constantly hear Father Michael reference scripture that talks about good parenting, okay? For many of us, it's spare the rod, okay? Okay, you do have to punish your kids. Because Dr. Spock came in and changed that. He's like, no, we should be able to raise our kids without punishing them, and they turn into good kids. And Father Michael, do you remember what happened? He finally had to admit that he was wrong.
Yeah, look at the crop, and some of which we inherited as baby boomers as well. It was a failed experiment. Like, as Rich made a beautiful distinction, there are abusive parents. We're talking about discipline, not abuse. When I would see a drill sergeant, just dressing somebody down, I never interfered. If I saw a drill sergeant punching somebody around, I would intervene, okay? There's a difference. Even in the animal world, you see discipline take place. That's how you learn. And so, yeah, I do think there are many venues, good organizations, even though there have been some abuses in those organizations, like the Boy Scouts or the Girl Scouts or whatever, there are good people that want to model certain things. But let me tell you something about mentoring. Rich said it. There are people in the church that have raised their families, they even grandparents. They want to share their knowledge, just like Rich does with his martial arts, and James does and all that he knows and all that he's experienced with the order that he's the commander of for the Military Order of the Purple Heart. And there are a lot of people that have never been mentored, and they're sometimes afraid to ask. Let's say, for instance, they were never taught how to cook or clean their house. Nobody's going to look down on you. I'll come over, not me, but somebody who has this skill. I'll show you how to cook. You know, the Bible is very clear about the older women teaching the younger women a lot, even how to love their families. And so I just think that we need to take time and say, I'm a servant. I'm here to mentor you. When I think of the time that Rich spends with these young people, he wants to impart something to them. And I know James as well. And I do a lot of mentoring, and they're not all in my church. Okay. I'm going out to the field tomorrow. You gentlemen pray for me. It's been a while since I've been out in the field, but they want the chaplain to be there. And that's okay, because I want to be there. I want to say, I can mentor you. I struggled in school, and by God's grace, I have a PhD. There's a lot of different things that we could do to help each other, but we're more concerned sometimes about achieving goals, making money, putting our hands down and lifting someone else up. You know, any of us, if we're honest, we can point to several people in our lives that made it possible for us to accomplish what we've done. We haven't done this by ourselves. It's been the grace of God and the grace of many people. And I've said, when Rich spent 5 years with me, reading through my dissertation with me, what a commitment that he made. But I realized I needed help. I needed an objective point of view. But there's a lot of things that these young people must have goals. They must want to be more than social media experts. Maybe they want to be a dentist or a doctor or something like that. There's a lot of good mentoring programs where you can get young people interested, that some of their goals, even if they're poor or haven't had benefits, I grew up very poor, that we could show them that there are opportunities by mentorship. And there is hope. There are a lot of children that are raising themselves today. That's really the truth. They don't have a significant person in their life that's a good model. And they're struggling by themselves. And I think that we got to get them off the social media, because it's really not producing anything. My students are writing papers, and several of them, I have about 50 students, several of them are writing about the social media and how harmful it is to young people and how inaccurate it is. I'm very pleased. They're taking up this themselves, probably maybe because some of them have seen the damage it's done in their own lives. It's not too late to care. And I just think that, you know, for young people, don't throw away your life. You know, we saw the other day this football player was, I think he's like 22, doing 156 miles an hour in his Corvette and hit somebody, you know, alcohol level high, and the person died, and he and his girlfriend were greatly wounded. I hate to see young people throw away their lives, or as we say in the military, shoot themselves in the foot. I mean, you know, you have a precious gift. Don't throw it away. Don't waste it. Time is running out. We all have an expiration date, and you don't know when that is. I have done funerals for babies in cribs. I brought home bodies of soldiers that are in their early 20s. I saw my own daughter die at 24, you know, being in a bassinet at 5 days old and being in a coffin. Believe me, every day is precious. And so don't waste your time, young people, on the social media. Get a life. And hopefully adults will say, what do you want to do? I'll help you get there. You know, sometimes we have to invest money. You know, we think, well, I made a lot of money last year. Maybe I need to buy another boat. No, maybe you need to send someone to a good school whose parents can't afford it. You know, until we get, you know, school choice where people can choose where they want to go and everybody gets an opportunity at a good education. But I just think we need to care more, but it's got to start on the community level. You know, we talked about how much Brett is doing for the veterans all over the place, but he's working in his own community as well, in some of those big cities in New Jersey, outside of New York City. And I just think that I'm hoping down the road that we're going to get a bigger facility because we're looking at an area where it's low-income housing, and not everybody can afford an expensive private school, but we can have a tutoring program. And we can not charge them or their families to help them get a step up. Want to give them a hand up, not a hand out. And so I just think that we need to take the gifts God has given us, the talents, the treasure, and the time, and start investing in the next generation. Because their parents, I hate to say this, but for the most part, I believe it's true, have abandoned them emotionally. Not physically, all of them, but emotionally. They're so caught up in their own pursuits, and they're turning around and leaving them in the dust. You know, let them take the family business over. Let them, you know, start to be involved in things. I remember this one man, and the last thing I'll say, he didn't expect to die at 49, but he had no successor. Big business. And we need to start thinking about the next generation and imparting some things to them and not letting them waste their time on these devices that don't bring them any real gratification or any real advancement.
Yeah. Well, you know, what do you say about that, Rich? What's your thoughts? I haven't heard you talk much, man.
Father Michael and I are in agreement on most of this. The problem is there's no room for me to play devil's advocate tonight. Okay. So all I'm really doing is just kind of expanding what Father Michael has said or just, you know, adding a new aspect of it. But, we clearly need to fix them. We need to fix it. We need to find solutions for the people who are out there listening. You can be the solution, or if you're having this problem, you can find a solution. We've talked about, the government solving the problem, for online bullying, it has a very limited role in that. There's only so much that the government can do. That's the real solution is going to come from parenting. But we've identified, well, there's a problem there. There's the lack of parents. Boys need well, it takes two parents to raise a kid. I mean, boys need a male role model, okay? And they can get that from an uncle. They can get that from a neighbor, okay? I'll tell you a story. Okay, so I came home, and my son was getting into BMX, and he just did the frame on his bicycle, and he wanted $150 to buy a new frame. And my wife was upset about it because, you know, I mean, this is costing money, all right? And what's he going to do? We're going to find another frame so he can just go break it. And I put it into perspective. I'm like, so it's either that or he sits on the couch and plays video games all day long. It takes a lot of physical energy to break that bicycle frame. To me, it's worth $150 to get him out there being physically active, okay? And, you know, if you look at mothers, they want to protect their children. They don't want them to get hurt. What's a dad's role? Yeah, go out there and break your damn leg, okay? Don't come crying to me. It's the dad who's like, no, go out there and make your mistake. However, the role of the father is to make sure they don't make those mistakes they can't recover and learn from, and that they can teach them some kind of lesson from that. Well, did you learn something from that, boy? Okay. And girls need that mother role model, okay? They need someone who's going to teach them how to dress up, how to put on makeup, okay? How to talk to a boy, okay? How to flirt. You know, there's, you know, so yeah, I'm just expanding on what we're actually right now just summarizing what Father Michael has been saying, and I want to again reiterate that the church, you know, if you're looking for a solution, find a church.
Can I tell a joke just quickly about what Rich was saying?
Yeah, please do. We need one.
this kid falls, scrapes his knee, and it's bleeding really bad. And, you know, the mother's being very compassionate. And, you know, let's not be afraid to say that there are such things as maternal instincts and nurturing. But he goes into the house, and all the father's concerned about is don't get the blood on the rug. And the mother's trying to save his life. He's bleeding to death. But, you know, and I think you need that tough love, and you need that compassion and that nurturing and that nursing. Even the Apostle Paul talks about a nursing mother. Even Jesus talked about a hen. So there is that kind of nurturing. But then Jesus also turned the tables over. You know, there's also kind of a stronger thing. And I'm afraid sometimes that what's happening with young people today, and I work with them every day, they don't have a toughness. They're very easily insulted or hurt. And I think that it's due to the fact they haven't had a good balance of input. You can't take one over the other. Okay, and there's a lot of people that do a lot of sacrificial things. I think what Rich said about the bike situation, he made a sacrifice for the sake of his son, and that's an important thing. But yeah, I think that, you know, there is that aspect where you're trying to, you know, baby the person. I can remember my wife talking to my son one time. He had done something, touched a computer, and seventh grade, she kept talking to him. You know, I wanted to have a dad talk with him. I'm not going to touch him or do anything like that, but I want to put the fear of God in him. And she was just, you know, giving him a nice conversation or whatever like that. He needed that. She gave him some good information, but he also needed to be afraid I think I mentioned this one time. He disrespected a teacher. My son was a good person. I went to school. I made him write a letter of apology to the teacher and to read it in front of the class. This was in high school. This teacher looked up, who's this priest in my classroom? Come by invitation. I told my son when I found out what he did. But, you know, I'm very proud of that same son today because I was able to confront him and make him do the right thing when he was still pliable. And so I think you need the nurturing of moms and grandmoms and aunts and siblings, but you also need the firmness. Whether you're a guy or a girl, you need the firmness as well. And that's a fully developed person.
Yeah. Well, we got 22 minutes, gentlemen. 2 minutes. And I think we've had a pretty lively discussion. You know, about a lot of things going on. I'll tell you some things that are going on with me personally. I am remodeling a bathroom right now. And you know, I grew up in a construction family. And I will tell you that I went in the Army because I didn't want to do construction work. So I literally, I just hate this kind of work. I really do. But it's coming along well. And I know that we're going to get it done. And I know that it's going to be, you know, spectacular. As you know, we're going to, we're also rebuilding the Point Pleasant River Museum, Pleasant, West Virginia. We ran into a lot of additional construction costs. And obviously this has put us in a position to where, you know, now we're kind of in a, you know, nobody's in a paid status, you know, after this week. So I'm volunteering as the director. Won't accept a penny until, you know, we get the doors open. And that probably won't be until February is what I'm thinking. But you know, it's just, it's so important that we do this right. And because we've run into these additional construction costs, you know, it's just a sacrifice you have to make. You know, do you want the museum open? Do you want to bring prosperity to your community? Then sometimes you got to get up and put in the sweat equity to make that happen. You know, it's a 20-minute drive for me to go to work every day. You know, but I just think it's worth it. I really do. I think it's worth it for me to do that. And unfortunately, not everybody feels that way. I was really shocked to see that, you know, that that there are some people that they will not leave their house, you know, without being paid. And it's just, it's a sad thing to see. I hope that the volunteerism spirit, you know, like we've seen in so many people, so many guests that we've had on here, you know, like Brent's one of them, you know, Brett, he was, you know, they were out driving around delivering backpacks tonight, you know, upstate New York. And, you know, nobody's paying them to do that. You know, they're raising the money to make it happen. And, you know, obviously somebody's got to pay the bill. And I think him, like a lot of people, especially the veterans in the veteran community, what we use our retirement or our disability pension to cover. But people don't realize that there are a lot of people out there that are really, you know, just absolutely, you know, barely hanging on by the skin of their teeth, but they're just giving and giving and giving. You know, Father Michael, it sounds like a testimony. You know, it sounds like an opportunity for people to talk about sacrifices made. You know, the famous thing that Christ said is, you know, take no thought for what you'll wear or what you'll eat. And just to go forward and to do what you need to do, you know, to preach the gospel or to do something righteous or good for others. And it's just sad. You see so many that are doing that you know, are often, you know, some of these people that are viciously attacked. You know, I'll just tell you, that, you know, what we talked about with the suicide rates among, you know, teens, it's just, yeah, you know, it's just the saddest thing, you know, if you ever meet somebody, a parent who has had a child under the age of 13 commit suicide. It's the saddest thing you'll ever see. And I just hope that we can do something. I hope some people, you know, get out of this nonsense of crazy online bashing and hating of each other. I mean, really, I just feel like punching people in the face. You know, I mean, I'd rather punch them in the face than say something nasty on Facebook. What do you think, Rich?
Well, when you talk about teen suicide, the sadness is that they had abandoned all hope. There's another problem we haven't addressed. We've talked about the reasons why they want to, I mean, the bullying side of it, you know, but to be that young and you're like, your whole life is ahead of you. Why have they abandoned all hope?
Given that hope and vision for the future, you know, I have my students, college students, tell me what they want written on their tombstone. In another course that I teach, I actually have them write an obituary. Because if we don't give people a sense of goals, it's interesting because in Dante's Inferno, it says abandon all hope because they're going into hell. But we're not in hell, even though this is a testing time on earth. I think Rich is hitting on something very important. Who instills hope? Who instills vision? Who instills excitement about what you can become in the future? My daughter that wants to be a doctor, she has a master's degree already. I'm her cheerleader. I'm encouraging her. She's gifted from God. That's going to happen in her life. But that comes from parents or people that have done something. Now, a lot of people will be your dream killer because they've never done anything themselves. But there are people that can instill hope and say, look, things look bleak now, but it'll get better. I mean, how many people in basic training, you know, they want to kill themselves, they want to go AWOL, they want to leave, but somebody inspires them to persevere. But it's got to be a more mature person. Where does hope come from? Certainly it's from God. The definition of hope is a serene expectation of good. But if you don't have adults telling you life is hard, but there's hope, you can feel helpless, but never hopeless. There's always hope. You know, Jesse Jackson used to always say, you know, keep hope alive, whatever like that. But it's got to be adults that instill. I mentioned earlier about parents abandoning their children, and I'm talking about emotionally. Now, there are a lot of, you know, deadbeat dad, deadbeat mobs that just, you know, left the scene, and these kids don't know their identity. They don't have any support financially or emotionally. But sometimes we think they're growing up on their own. My children still, as adults, I'm not in their chain of command, as you both understand, but I'm in their chain of counsel. And so I think when a young person loses hope or vision, I blame that on the adults. They're supposed to instill it, take them places, show them different, you know, especially if they don't know what they want to do in life, take them and show them different occupations. There's all kinds of different things that we can do to awaken them, that there's more in life than talking to your friends about stuff you don't, none of you really even understand. So I do think, like, my students, these are mostly soldiers, because I let them know that they could lose their lives. And I have them write an obituary. And what do you want on your tombstone? So now you can start plotting your goals for what you want to become in life, because there's no guarantee. Now, Bible says 70 years, if by strength 80, And Billy Graham said that that's the average. You know, people die young, people die older. But we got to be intentional if we're going to be fulfilled, and especially fulfill God's will.
To me, hope is what, it's that light at the end of the tunnel. It's that sense that gives you the ability to overcome obstacles. It's like when you're in ranger school, for us, it's like I'm a winter ranger, and I remember being in the swamps in Florida. And it dropped down below, 40, and you were wet, you were not sleeping that night. And it was miserable. And your hope was, just let me get to see the sun come up. As soon as you saw the first rays of sunlight, it's going to get better. And that was a mental thing. You weren't getting warmer by seeing those rays, but your mind was telling you, I'm going to get warmer. Okay, this is going to be over. Now, the problem is, you're just going to go through the whole thing again that next night. But you're like, just get me through the night. Let me get to see the sun come up. And now I'll give you another joke. And it's like when West Point was 4 years long, and I had a friend tell me one time, he said, yeah, it took me 4 years at West Point to find out that the light at the end of the tunnel was actually a mirror. And it's going to take me, because that was our military obligation. But anyway, hope gives us the inspiration and the motivation to overcome the adversity that we're facing today, facing now. Okay.
My mother taught me about perseverance and tenacity. And I think we've got to build in the characters of young people not to give up so easily, to stick to certain things, not to quit. Because we're teaching them, like Rich was saying with Ranger School, we're teaching them character qualities. You can't give up. You got to learn perseverance. Usually people outlast other people. They may not be the best on a football team, but the other person who was looking for all the glory, they left, they quit, and someone else outlasted them. And so if we don't teach them and model perseverance, Rich and I have often talked about how some of our ancestors have stayed on the same job for 30 years, and they had a goal in mind. But we have to teach young people that, like Rich said, there's going to be a better day. Now, a lot of people went through Ranger School. They made it. And so we have to give people hope in the sense that you'll make it. That's encouragement. And I don't know if we're doing that because perhaps we're too involved in our own pursuits.
Right. Well, I'll tell you. What are y'all doing on Veterans Day? And I'm just going to ask this question because, I have an invitation to go to the White House. So I'm going to be in the White House on the 11th. And then I'm going to be at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier on the 11th. And then on the 12th, I'm going to be at the Vietnam Wall, laying wreaths. So it's kind of interesting, being in this position that I'm in now, that, again, another volunteer position. Thank God I got a retirement check, right?
I'm going to be part of a program at my wife's school. They have one every year, veterans program, possibly offer a prayer, and then each veteran tells where they served and when, and it's a wonderful time, great music. But boy, that's awesome. I recently saw a presentation about the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier by a former, honor guard that served as a soldier at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier.
Yeah.
I usually like to just spend the time alone, okay? Generally watching war movies, but that's a day I just like to remember, sit and remember, what I've been through, what others have been through. I've As a historian, I write about the exploits of other other warriors, and I've had the privilege through my experience as a historian to come to know a lot of warriors who have passed before me. And so for me, it's a time of remembrance and appreciation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's Veterans Day. What a wonderful day. You know, November 11th, you know, the whole history of that, you know, the 11th hour of the 11th day, you know, when the guns fell silent in the First World War. And that's pretty interesting. You know, I just got a letter today from a lady that was researching her great-grandfather who was in World War One and was wounded. And he never got a Purple Heart. Obviously, they didn't have a Purple Heart until 1932, and then they had to go and apply, and they could get the Purple Heart. You know what I mean? After that. But evidently, he just never did it for whatever reason. He got the wound chevron. I think that's what they gave him, right, Rich? A chevron on their uniform.
Yes, that it was originally a wound chevron, correct. On the, I think it was on the right sleeve. The left sleeve was, it's the same chevron for the overseas services. But mm-hmm. on the left sleeve, it was overseas. On the right sleeve, it was a wound.
Yeah. Well, so they're trying to find out how to get, you know, how to get, you know, obviously he's been dead since 1988, but the family's trying to get that Purple Heart. And, you know, I think that's really cool, you know, that we don't forget because they're no longer around. It won't be long and the World War II veterans will all be gone. And, you know, I think that's so sad because, you know, Rich, I'm sure that, you know, both you and Father Mike both remember World War II veterans that were young, strong, and you know, vibrant men, you know, when you were kids. You know, they were still pretty tough guys. And I can remember that, you know, too. You know, most of them were, you know, in their late 40s and 50s when I first remember talking to World War II veterans like my uncles. And I sit back and I do the math. I'm like, well, I'm the same age as they were now, you know. And so, you know, I think about, you know, I'm 30 years plus after, you know, you're 30 years plus after Panama, Rich. And Father Michael, you're, you know, you're, how long was it since you left from Vietnam?
This year, 50 years.
50 years. It just flies by. You know, it's just.
Yeah. Hey, James, and don't forget, yeah, it's been almost, it's getting close to 20 years for you. But keep in mind, as a DA civilian, I'm an Iraq and Afghan vet.
You know, my son, who is in the Air National Guard now, is gonna, you know, he's applied for OTS and he's gonna try to be a drone pilot, you know, in the active duty Air Force. And they won't take him until 2022, until after he graduates. He gets his master's this December, which is, I'm so proud of him, you know. But I'm sitting there thinking about it. He will probably be commissioned around April of 2022, which will be 20 years from when I got my commission in April of 2002. And that is just hard for me to even fathom right now. I'm just going to just tell you. It's just, you know, 20 years. You know, if I would have stayed in, you know, I would have had 20 commissioned officer years April of 2022, April the 2nd, actually. You know, I wish that they would have done it on April Fool's Day, because then that would have been so memorable. But isn't that something? 20 years, golly, man. Oh, well. We had a good time.
I'm sure we both can think, you know, I was at E3 and an O3, and just think about all the goodness of God and all the experiences that we had. And now we've got to use those experiences to help others, to open doors for others, veterans who are unaware. I'm so excited, James, that we're being proactive and reaching out to some of these groups that are doing great things for veterans. Now, Veterans Day, we got to think not only about those who sacrificed, but now those that are home and they haven't gotten their footing. Those from Afghanistan, those from Iraq, those younger people, we've got to celebrate them and help them to do with some of our forebears. My father was drafted, but he didn't see any action in Second World War. But they got a lot of benefits. They were able to buy homes, get on their feet. And let's just pray that this Veterans Day can be a celebration for the new veterans as well.
Let's do that. Go ahead. Say a prayer for us, Father Michael. Close us out.
Heavenly Father, we thank you. All of us are so grateful that we were able to serve our country. But when we lifted our hand in our day, we said, for God first, then country. I pray for all those veterans, Lord, that are maybe despised by others, maybe neglected by some. I just pray that we can celebrate them and embrace them. As a Vietnam vet, I've waited many, many years before people told me, welcome home. Because before it was a spit or a baby killer comment. Lord, I pray that this Veterans Day can be a celebration of all veterans, those past, present, and future. I ask and pray a blessing upon all and upon James and Rich. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you very much. That's all we have tonight. Thank you for listening in to Continue Mission. I think we had a good spirited debate. All of you folks that are out there listening, hey, look, reach out to us. Let us know. Call in sometimes. You know what I mean? Share this message. I think it's a good message, especially what we were talking about, taking care of our youth. It takes a village, folks, and make sure that we're all setting a good example for our youth and make sure that we truly are our brothers and our sisters' keepers. And let's never forget that, because it's a responsibility that we have for humanity. God bless each and every one of you. And for all of those veterans that are out there and family members, God bless you as we go into this week where we reflect and thank those for their service. Have a great evening, folks, and a great weekend, and may you all be blessed, you and your families. Good night.
Good show.